Okay. That's because Rich is on it. Hey, who's coming on?
Hi, this is Sandy Davis in Miami. Hi, Sally.
Hi.
And Chuck Altman in Detroit.
Hi, Chuck.
Hey, Sally.
You don't miss many of these, do you?
Nope.
Hello, who's on?
Evelyn Salguero.
I couldn't hear you. Say again.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I'll say it again.
Jean Schneider.
Jean Schneider. I think your phone might be going in and out. I'm not sure. All right, who else just came on, please?
I muted the phone.
Oh, okay. Say your name first.
Evelyn.
Are you Jean?
I'm sorry?
Hi, Jean. Hello?
Hello? Yeah, what did you say? I'm sorry? Hello?
This is Jean. Oh, Jean Schneider.
Schneider, okay.
I thought I muted my phone.
That's all right. And Jean, where do you live?
In Boulder, Colorado.
Aye, okay. All right, is there someone else on who hasn't said their name?
Yes. Evelyn Salguero, and I'm calling from Miami, Florida. Do I mute my phone now?
Yeah. What is your first name first, please?
Evelyn.
Evelyn. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. Hi, Sally. Hi, Virginia. It's Bill Hyman, Dr. Bill. I'm the California State Coordinator for PDA.
Hey, Dr. Bill. The sun must still be out in California, right? Not nighttime yet?
There's somebody else.
All right, who is that?
Scott Taylor from Texas.
Hi. Where do you live in Texas?
McKinney. It's one of the states that wants to succeed from the union, which I don't get, so. I don't know. These states, I mean, it's like a little child that go their way, so now they want to leave. Come on, because I don't understand.
Welcome to my state. I live in Arizona.
Oh, they want to succeed, too? They want to leave the union?
Yep.
Oh, I also have an issue with a black president, because it seemed to all happen after the election. They,
uh-huh.
I know. I'm glad it turned out that way. It's better than an alternative, but we can work on him. That's what PDA is about. I think,
yes.
You know, he's going to be more reasonable if he can change.
Personally, I hope he uses the mandate that he's got.
Exactly, yes. You know, every other feel is, you know, like the mayor paid a fair share, no social justice, you know, that they'll be bullied.
That's
better
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
You could say something. Hello, who else is on the phone that didn't say their name?
David Sonneborn, Orange County, California.
Hi, Dave. I don't think you've been on this call for a while. It's nice to have you. Hi, who just came on, please?
Jim Carpenter, Milwaukee.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question for someone from Wisconsin today, and I can't remember right now what it was.
Well, I sent a question about Helsinki. Conference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether the PDA is going to take a position and try to promote that. I heard that that's a real path to getting rid of nuclear weapons, and the UN is trying to promote a nuclear weapons free zone in the Middle East, and the Helsinki conference is called in December, and they want help in promoting that.
I did get that email, and I did not read it. I think I didn't even read it at all, let alone carefully. So I'm glad you're on the call to remind us.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about it, right?
Yeah, I'd like to support that, too, and reduce our nuclear arms as well.
Sounds
all
like
right.
We have a good group on here tonight.
Might be good. All right. What do you think, Sally? Are we ready?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm Virginia Hofflair. I'm co-chair of the End Wars and Occupations IoT with Sally Weiss. We welcome you to our call tonight. Our guest speaker is Mary Ladke. She lives in Kansas City, and she is a board member of Military Families Speak Out and a member of the United for Peace and Justice Afghanistan Working Group. We're happy to discuss, since now the election is over, we can get to work on a Jobs Not Wars campaign. Mary, welcome to our call. She will explain exactly what this is.
Sure.
So take it away, Mary.
Okay, thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. We are excited to tell you about a new campaign we feel a lot of people will want to get involved with. It has a lot of potential, and it is about making sure the President and Congress follow the mandate of the people by their vote. So basically, it's entitled Jobs Not Wars Campaign, initiated by our working group at United for Peace and Justice. And this campaign was developed to immediately apply pressure to the newly elected Congress and President to do the will of the American people. The American people have rejected by their votes deficit reduction at the expense of the poor, elderly, and working and middle-class families. So our group got together and thought, well, how are we going to do this effectively? How will we actually get them to do what we want instead of what the corporations want? So, you know, in the past, each group did their own thing in small numbers. They did a good job, but in small numbers, and that is our case also. So our idea was to build a broad coalition that appeals to a wide audience. So many organizations have common goals, but separately we don't have a whole lot of influence. So our idea was to build a coalition that appeals to economic issues, people who work on the economic issues, social justice, racial groups, labor groups, youth, it appeals to youth, seniors, and environmental groups. So the idea was to band together to have a louder, more effective voice. And what we think we've done is developed a simple, clear message that these groups can support. So we've developed a petition that some of you may already read, but we're asking our partners to circulate among their supporters. And, of course, we are asking people to sign on and endorse the campaign. The petition and all the signatures at the end will be presented to Congress and Obama around the time of the inauguration. And also we're going to have different actions in various congressional districts at the same time. So what we're hoping for is a large response to the petition that will send a clear message to the White House and to the members of Congress that it is time to do the will of the American people, not corporations and not lobbyists. So that is kind of the idea behind our petition. And I can tell you the goal of our petition, but if anybody has a quick question they'd like to ask me now before I get into the petition goals, I can take questions if you like. Okay, what I'll tell you about the petition itself and the goals would be asking for a rapid end to the war in Afghanistan. You know, they say it's the end of 2014. You know, everybody thinks it's over. Well, you know, that's 26 months from now. That's 26 months more of combat, of deaths and injuries for a very lost cause. And our military, which my son is part of, know it. And the morale in the military is just at the bottom because they don't see why they're dying and suffering for a lost cause. So that's the first request. The second is creating jobs by investing in our communities and our people to grow our economy and put people back to work. The third goal is assuring that reconstruction of the areas devastated by Hurricane Sandy are under the control of the government and jobs are created for the public interest. So the idea is to train and hire veterans and train and hire the unemployed and not to privatize those jobs, to give it to the American people and help rebuild our infrastructure and create good jobs for our people. The fourth is redirecting our nation's resources from war and wasteful Pentagon spending to fund the necessary social programs and public services that we all need, you know, for the seniors and health care and education and all those things. The fifth goal is relying foremost on a determined diplomacy and patient negotiation rather than military power to respond to international disputes. You know, we seem to be very quick to get involved in, combat operations. And so we would much rather focus on being the leader of the free world and the world, diplomacy, to get the job done. And the last requirement or goal would be requiring those at the top of the income ladder and giant corporations to pay their fair share. And so we think those goals meet a lot of people's needs and will free up money and jobs and all the things, all the issues that they have under that one big umbrella. So the campaign really has already garnered support from national, regional, and local labor groups, peace and anti-war groups already, economic groups, environmental groups, but we're looking to build a very strong coalition that will continue over time, that will have a formidable voice in Washington, D.C., to make sure that the American people get what it is that they need instead of corporations. So what we're doing is we're introducing it to people so they become familiar with it and to see if their organization would like to sign on and endorse the campaign. We're going to be having templates and all that can go on your website if your group would like to join in the petition. And we do have a national call set for tomorrow, Wednesday the 14th, again at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And at that time, we'll go over the pre-launch items for the organizations that have already endorsed the campaign, and also people who are thinking about endorsing the campaign will be on the call as well. And then we will be launching fairly soon. We have to work out the details on the website. The launch will be probably within the next a week or two. And so that's kind of where we're at. And I know that Sally probably sent you all the information for the campaign and the petition and the endorsement form. So basically, we just want to make you aware of it, if your group might be interested in joining the cause and, making our voices heard in D.C. That's my kind of wrap-up of the situation.
All right. Now, besides the organizations, we want individuals to sign these petitions, correct?
Yes, that is true. It can be organizations, big or small, national, local, and it can be individuals also.
And are we also recommending, I would think that we would recommend that local groups, like say you're a chapter of Veterans for Peace and maybe national hasn't signed on yet, would it help to get individual chapters to sign on?
Absolutely. You know, that we were talking about that. You know, we started with the idea of getting the big groups to sign on, you know, kind of a top-down effect. But you know what? Grassroots many times is more effective. So if we get the local groups involved and them saying to their state group, hey, this is a great campaign. We can do some good things here, and we can have a voice also. You know, we are willing to listen to what others have to say and make improvements and all that. So you can get the state group involved, and then maybe the national group will pay attention. And it just seems, I know with what we do, we work so hard in Military Family Speak Out, we work so hard in USPJ, but still when we do a really nice campaign, you know, it's only going to our own small group, and so we may send 1,000 signatures, but that just doesn't seem enough to make them do something. So the idea is to get, you know, 100,000 singers, maybe more, whatever we can do to really make an impact, to let them know that they have been mandated to do the will of the people, and that they're not going to make a grand bargain and give away the things that we want. That's the idea.
All right. And is there any action item besides the petitions that have been discussed that we should?
The petition is the first item, and then as we grow and go along, you know, we will, you know, build on that and discuss other things that we can do. But this is the big first initial idea, and getting all the groups together, and so that's where we're at now, because we are just literally putting this together, you know, in the past few weeks, to be effectively, you know, letting them know in D.C. when they all get back there and are inaugurated that this is what they need to do.
This is Gary from Reno. I have a real good suggestion as far as an organization. A fairly progressive person in charge is Leo Gerard of the United Steelworkers.
Gerard, United Steelworkers?
Yes, Leo Gerard. I've heard him speak on Ed Schultz a bunch, and he sounds like a real progressive to me.
Okay. So he's a national figure. We could look him up on the Internet and see if we can get a hold of him. And we do have some labor groups on board. They may have a way to contact him also.
Yes, United Steelworkers, that should be pretty easy.
Yeah, it should be pretty easy.
I would think. If not, contact me and I'll get a hold of him myself.
Okay, and
then we might just do that.
That's fine.
Yeah. What is your name again?
Gary McKenzie from Reno.
Gary McKenzie from Reno, Nevada.
Yes.
Thank you.
So,
one organization I think of is Jobs with Justice. I don't know if that exists in anybody else's area. It does in mine. And we seem to be having some trouble getting to the top of that organization. So another way of doing it is trying to get local Jobs with Justice organizations to sign on, and just the way Mary said it, and then maybe it'll climb up to the top. So I don't know if anyone else has Jobs with Justice.
I think Kate Walsh may have had some contacts in Chicago, but I don't know how far she got either. But, you know, getting, you know, our small groups involved is just as effective, I think. And then as we grow and get strong, people will, you know, the group itself will grow, I think. The movement will grow. And there's a lot of people out there doing the exact same kind of things we want to do, but they're still doing them in their own little pocket. And our idea is a little bit separate in that we want to bring more people together in one umbrella to be a stronger voice.
So it could really be an assignment for everybody on this call.
Mm-hmm.
If I sort of assuming that everyone here is in some sort of peace and justice group. And on the agenda, if you came to the call from the agenda, there are the links to this Jobs Not Wars campaign. So you can download it and take it to people. In my mind, I'm excited about it, so I think it sells itself. It makes it's kind of common sense, and as Mary's been saying, it's I think it's very consonant with how the voters voted this year.
Valid. Is the website up yet?
Pardon me?
Is the website up yet?
No, that is in development. They're working on the technical side of that website so that groups that do sign on and they want to the names collected that come through their website, they'll be able to get that data for their own organization. So that side they're working on. But the text and everything is pretty much there. It's now the technical end, and hopefully within a week or so, we will be able to launch. We don't have that date yet.
Sally, it's Dr. Bill.
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me? I know we've worked with closely with Michael Eisinger and U.S. Labor Against the War. So that would be another tie-in, you know, for connection with labor. If folks aren't familiar with that organization.
And yeah, Michael is one of the brains behind this. In fact, he's working with USPJ on this project, and he is working with us now, and he's like our lead, one of our lead people.
Oh, okay, good. I just hadn't heard it mentioned yet. Thanks.
Yes, I hadn't mentioned it. Thank you. You're right. He's really a very good inspiration.
Thank you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. This is Jean from Boulder. I wondered if you had any contact with the Friends Committee on National Legislation. This is a very active group, in lobbying group in Washington.
We have, and I have been in touch with Matt Southworth and other people with Diane Randall and Jim Kaysen, and
good.
They are still working on coming along with us. They did support the faithful budget, which is also very, very much the concerns expressed in our petition. So we're hoping that they sign on with ASS.
I hope so.
And, you know, if you know local people, tell them you'd like them to sign on. So, yes, they are definitely considering it.
Thanks.
Good suggestion.
Anyone else have any questions?
Yeah, this is Dr. Bill again. Hi. I just wanted to ask about it sounds like we're talking mainly about organizing. In terms of messaging, and I think, you know, coming out of the elections, it's really important to emphasize that the Republicans especially were so off base with this whole discussion of, you know, asking for trillions more than the Pentagon has ever even requested. And you know, it was good to see Obama pick up on that. Of course, there's other issues like the drone attacks, which I know there was some attention this weekend with Veterans Day brought forward, especially things like drone attacks. And I know that even on the PDA website today, we're running an article about Secretary Panetta and I guess Clinton and Obama even going off to Asia. You know, it almost sounds like they're trying to drum up animosity instead of diplomacy, as you mentioned, you know, with Asia, with China in particular. And of course, Romney was so clueless, he didn't know who our, you know, enemy was. You know, couldn't name, I guess, on any particular day it was somebody else. But anyhow, in terms of messaging, I know that you know, MFSO and Code Pink and all the UFPJ, all the major anti-war community has you know, been very solid, very straightforward, and I'm just hoping that that, you know, that we can keep the message like they're saying, like you're saying, you know, your group is saying. Specifically on you know, diplomacy first all over the world. So I appreciate
that. Right. You know, we are the, you know, the supposedly, as we all say, the best nation, you know, and why can't we use our intelligence and all our resources to do something constructive instead of destructive? We have way too many weapons. We don't need any more. And, you know, what are we going to do with all this stuff? You know, we have to find a better way to get along in the world. First of all, we can't afford it anymore. You know, people need their health care. People, the elderly, need to be cared for. There's so many human needs that are not being addressed. And then, of course, the environment. You know, the Army, the military uses more oil that's their best customer. And so that doesn't help our environment. And so that's why we're trying to see, you know, cutting Pentagon spending and making reasonable instead of outrageous, and it affects all types of groups, not just peace and anti-war. It affects people who are concerned about the environment. It also addresses the concerns of people who want to care for the elderly and the poor and protecting our social safety net. So if we there's plenty of money. If we redirect it and aren't wasting it, we can do all those good things to create jobs, rebuild our infrastructure, and take care of the people who need to be taken care of. It's a matter of priorities and how we spend our money. And right now, that's just totally out of control. And so that campaign can appeal to a broad group instead of just, peace or anti-war, because we've been working at this a long time, and I think we'll do better with a bigger coalition, and our voices will be heard better that way.
Absolutely. This is Dave here. I didn't catch whether or where this petition is available for us to sign on. I'm glad to hear there's. I'm impressed that you're connecting a lot of the dots, which always needs doing. So I wonder, did you already tell us where we can find this petition?
Sally, did you get an agenda from Sally tonight? Because she has all that information on the agenda.
Dave, I don't know if you looked at the agenda. I think Dave he is a faithful PDA person. Maybe you just know it's second Tuesday of the month. The End War and Occupation Group will be.
I did sign up. I didn't see that there, but I will check again. Thank you.
Sally, you could send it to him again to be sure he has it so
right.
that he can sign up.
And I think this will call. This whole call here will call for us to send an action alert in a week or 10 days, kind of reiterating everything.
Okay. Was there any other questions or concerns or comments that you may have had?
Are there any, excuse me, this is Gary from Reno.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any placards or posters or something that we can distribute in like areas where there would be progressives gathering?
You know, that's a good point. I know they were talking about making a few templates that you can use on people's websites, but that's also a good idea. It's something that they can download and print off and give out at different events, you know, getting everyone involved. So that is a very good suggestion, and we can make something like that available on the website so that you can access it.
Thank you.
That's a good idea.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we need everybody to stay tuned for the final version of the petition. It should be coming out soon. We did, in our agenda, send links to the proposal and the form for signing on for organizations. So go back to your email from us regarding this phone call, and those links are there. Also, on the agenda, when it talked about to email Sally or me, Virginia, about questions. Our emails are there, the links to our emails. So if you have any questions, please feel free to email either one of us, and we will get right back to you. Like Mary said, I believe that the website's going to be up soon. And once we get that website up, we'll be sending out notices again about with the links to the website. Correct, Mary?
Right, that's great. And if anybody is interested in signing up, they can do that anytime. They can go on tonight and sign up, or they can just attend the call to get more information if that's what they'd like to do. But I think it will be a good campaign. We've already got a number of people signing on, and I think as more and more people hear about it, it'll just continue to grow.
Excellent. Yes, it is time for all of us to connect the dots and get all of our issues together, all our issue organizing teams together for one broad-based push to push our politicians to do what we want them to do. So thank you so much, Mary. Are there any more questions for Mary before we move on to what's happening in Syria and Iran?
I have one more statement. Does anyone realize how much material has been left over in Iraq in terms of tanks, armored vehicles, jeeps, you name it? There's a lot of billions of dollars worth of equipment that's being left there.
I don't doubt it.
And possibly even more so in Afghanistan, which being a landlocked country and we, the United States, don't have particularly good relationships with some of the countries surrounding it. So it's going to be a really expensive matter to get things back.
Okay, so if there's more questions and comments, we're going to move on to Sandy Davies, who's going to give us an update on Syria and what's happening in Iran. Sandy?
Yeah, hi, everybody. So,
hi.
First of all, I think just to put Iran and Syria in the context of overall U.S. policy, I think we need to understand that despite the human catastrophes and destabilization of Iraq and Afghanistan, there has really been no change in the U.S. policy of pursuing violent regime change against governments that pose problems for U.S. interests. But our government has adapted to the disasters in Iraq and Afghanistan, essentially with a series of experiments designed to achieve or find ways to achieve regime change without incurring tens of thousands of U.S. casualties, and also without totally alienating the rest of the world, especially the closest allies of the U.S. But in spite of all that, human catastrophe and chaos are really still just inevitable results of U.S. violent U.S. regime change policies, no matter how or where they're conducted. So the hundreds of thousands of Libyans who've been killed, wounded, tortured, or are still rotting in militia-run prisons are viewed as the acceptable cost of a successful regime change policy. And we'll come back to this kind of calculation when we look at U.S. policy on Iran in a minute. But first, President Obama has explained that part of the reason for seeking regime change in Syria is precisely because Syria is Iran's most important ally in the Arab world. And so, as of last December, almost a year ago, even as a Qatari-funded opinion poll found that 55% of Syrians still supported their government, Philip Giraldi, a retired CIA officer, was reporting that unmarked NATO planes were flying weapons and fighters from Libya to the Free Syrian Army's headquarters in Turkey. British and French special forces were already training Free Syrian Army recruits in Turkey. The CIA and U.S. special forces were already providing intelligence and communications for the Free Syrian Army, and Turkey was already committed to invading Syria if and when NATO gave it the green light. Then moving on to March and April of this year, we had Kofi Annan offering a peace plan to try and bring this horrendous bloodshed to an end. But unfortunately, the U.S. and its allies undermined Kofi Annan's peace plan with what some of them referred to as Plan B. They held three so-called Friends of Syria conferences, at which the U.S. and its allies pledged more money and more weapons to the armed rebels in Syria and in Turkey, and thereby discouraging them from complying with the first part, essential part of Kofi Annan's plan, which was a ceasefire. Now there is, there has been all along political opposition inside Syria that is essential to a peaceful resolution of the crisis, but the peaceful political opposition inside Syria has been sidelined by the militarization of this conflict by the outside powers, notably the United States, Britain, France, Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia. I wrote more about this in an article that was published on Alternet a couple of weeks ago, and that's also on the PDA and Wars and Occupations homepage. And it was titled Armed Rebels and Middle Eastern Power Plays, How the U.S. is Helping to Kill Peace in Syria. And I also mentioned in that article that President Obama has acknowledged that this is part of his policy toward Iran. Achieving regime change in Syria is a means towards eventually achieving it in Iran as well. I think what we see happening with U.S. policy toward Iran at the moment is that it's proceeding pretty much along the same trajectory as U.S. policy on Iraq in the 1990s. The sanctions on Iran have not yet killed hundreds of thousands of small children as they did in Iraq, but they have already succeeded in reducing Iran's oil exports by about 60%, from 2.5 million barrels a day down to about 1 million barrels a day. And between that and the other sanctions, they are already inflicting a great deal of pain and suffering on the people of Iran. And as with Iraq, the other major powers in the world are going along with sanctions as really to kind of offer the United States an alternative to war. But this is the same kind of appeasement that eventually led to war in Iraq. But let's go back to the to those two new priorities in the way that the U.S. is now trying to achieve regime change in these countries. They want to do it without tens of thousands of U.S. casualties, and they want to do it without turning the whole world against us. But it actually seems that U.S. policymakers have more or less figured out that they simply cannot start a war with Iran without undermining both of those goals. First, on U.S. casualties, Admiral Fitzgerald, the former deputy naval commander of U.S. Central Command, has said that he does not see how the U.S. could ever end a war with Iran once it started one. So in other words, if we start a war with Iran, it will go on more or less indefinitely. It will keep escalating. It will explode all over the region, and it will sooner or later result in precisely the large numbers of U.S. casualties the U.S. officials are now desperate to avoid. Second, on alienating the rest of the world and isolating the U.S., as the war in Iraq did to some extent, whatever support the U.S. now has for these punitive sanctions would literally vanish overnight if the U.S. actually attacked Iran. Britain recently told the U.S. that attacking Iran would violate international law and that the U.S. would therefore not be able to use Diego Garcia, its bases in Britain, or any other British territories in a war against Iran. Now that is David Cameron listening to his legal advisors, as Tony Blair refused to do, because David Cameron does not want to become a political pariah like Tony Blair has. Russia has so far exercised restraint and restrictions on arms sales to Iran, but again, that would end if the U.S. actually attacked Iran. The 120 countries of the Non-Aligned Movement openly and explicitly support Iran's right to enrich uranium, and they would only take a much stronger anti-U.S. position if we start a war. China, of course, effectively bankrolled the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but those debts and their huge dollar reserves now give China leverage by which it could, in fact, force the U.S. to withdraw from a war that was going badly with Iran. And that is exactly the same kind of leverage that President Eisenhower used in 1956 to force Britain and France to withdraw from their war in Egypt in the Suez Crisis. China is already using its position as a major importer of oil from Iran to pressure Iran to reopen the P5+1 negotiations. That's with the five permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany. And this a war in Iran would seriously threaten China's oil imports and really the whole global economy. You know, we could expect a $200 a barrel oil very, very quickly. And so China may actually be ready to play power politics in a way that it has really never done before, to force both sides to make concessions and resolve this crisis. So I think there's actually a lot positive here. And so what we can do as activists is to pressure the Obama administration and Congress to get the U.S. back to the table to finally negotiate in good faith to remove sanctions against Iran in exchange for any reasonable concessions that Iran is willing to make. The last time that Iran agreed to what we asked, which was to ship their 20% enriched uranium out of the country in exchange for nuclear fuel, you know, we had asked them to do that, and when Brazil and Turkey got them to agree to that, then the U.S. basically just refused to take yes for an answer. Because basically the U.S. goal is not really related to the nuclear issue. The U.S. goal is regime change. One of the things we can do is to keep challenging the fiction that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. Unlike with Iraq, we actually have the backing of the U.S. intelligence community on that position. The 2007 National Intelligence Estimate, which is the consensus view of all 16 major U.S. intelligence agencies, declares unequivocally that Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program, that any research they may have been doing on a weapons program ended in 2003 with the end of the Saddam Hussein regime that threatened them. And so really, I think from what is in fact already starting to happen and what really should happen from now on is that any U.S. official, any member of Congress, any media personality or media outlet who claim or imply or suggest that Iran has a nuclear weapons program should reap a whirlwind of emails, phone calls, and public ridicule. And I think that is something that we can all be part of. You know, whenever, you know, I think perhaps this is something that PDA can do some kind of generalized action alert on, just to, you know, there are already groups like FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and Robert Naiman at Just Foreign Policy, who have targeted specific media outlets when they have made those kind of claims. But I think that's something that we can all just be attuned to, and that we can, we can just automatically do, you know, whenever we, and in particular at our brown bag lunch vigils and in our dealings with members of Congress and their staffs, we can do the same thing and just really keep reiterating the 2007 NIE, which, by the way, during the furor this summer with Netanyahu and Israel beating the war drums, at some point, I can't remember whether it was Petraeus or, but basically the U.S. intelligence community reiterated that their position has not changed since the 2007 NIE. In the consensus view, Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. And so, you know, this is by going after that, you know, we're not simply opposing a war with Iran, but we are also undermining the basis of the sanctions and at the same time, you know, calling for diplomacy. So I'm really interested in what other ideas anyone else may have, and in particular, any ideas for any action we can take, you know, that can help at all to restore peace to Syria and restore diplomacy with Iran.
This is Gary from Reno. I believe I read that Israel was lobbing some artillery across the border into Syria. Is that correct?
Yes, that is. That was in response to some stray mortar shells coming over the border their way. And, of course, Israel has a tendency to retaliate very forcefully to anything like that. But that just stresses the danger of the situation. I mean, the same thing is happening on the Turkish border. And, the longer this goes on, the worse it will get. The more the danger of it exploding beyond Syria's borders.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Sandy, this is Sally. Do you think that we will ever get any place with the idea of a nuclear-free Middle East?
Well, I think that's a great idea. Was that the conference in Helsinki was about that somebody mentioned?
Yeah, I mentioned that. This is Jim in Milwaukee. It's actually UFPJ that sent out a letter a couple weeks ago asking for sign-ons to President Obama and to the Congress, saying that there has been a proposal for a Helsinki conference called by the UN Secretary to talk about the nuclear free zone in the Middle East and why aren't you pushing it. And there was some in our newspaper on Sunday, it was reported that that conference was called off, but apparently it's not been called off, and we're being asked to sign on to a letter to continue to promote that conference. I'll just read one paragraph from the letter. For 30 years, the United Nations has called for a nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East. The 2010 Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty Review Conference unanimously called for an international conference to begin discussing a zone free of nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East. The proposed conference is scheduled for mid-December 2012 in Helsinki, Finland. We call upon President Obama and U.S. Congress to actively and visibly support the Helsinki Conference for a Middle East free of nuclear weapons and all other weapons of mass destruction. And I should add that Peace Action had a campaign not that long ago saying that if Israel put their weapons of mass destruction on the table in terms of negotiation, that would be a completely different negotiation, because Iran is reacting to the fact that there's a double standard here, one for Israel, one for them. So that's a part of the impetus for doing this.
And Iran has already signed on to the idea of a nuclear free zone for the Middle East.
Right, but of course Israel hasn't.
Right. Well, that's the problem. And has the U.S. Agreed to take part in the Helsinki conference? I believe Israel has said they will not take part in it.
Well, my understanding is the U.S. did, but it was called off, and it didn't say it was because Israel wasn't taking a part in it, but the way a peace activist I talked to last night thought about it is probably it was because Israel wasn't taking part in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the question is for our brown bag lunch vigils, which I think are called something else now, by the way, should we bring this Helsinki conference up and say, please promote this for mid-December?
Sounds like a good idea.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we're calling them congressional education events or something like that. And that would certainly fit that bill.
Yeah, so if it can be put on the official, the people here who are in charge of this this discussion here, if this can be put on, talk to Tim Carpenter and whoever else is in charge of putting things on the docket for these congressional education sessions, if this would be put on there, that would be helpful, I would think.
Thank you, Jim. We notice that Jim has the same last name as Tim Carpenter.
Yeah.
Jim Carpenter.
I'm Jim Carpenter, and it's Tim Carpenter, but yeah, it is pretty ironic.
Sandy, this is Carl Moose in Massachusetts.
Hey, Carl.
I have a question. What is the significance of the report we've just recently heard that the Syrian opposition have finally come to some kind of an agreement and unified? Is that a big danger sign?
Yeah, it's one more step down the road of, essentially all along the model here has been Libya. I mean, the same way they took the surge in Iraq as the model for Afghanistan, and they've kind of taken the successful regime change and butchering of Gaddafi in Libya and made it the model for Syria, knowing obviously full well from day one that it would be even more bloody and destabilizing. But part of from that way of looking at it, part of what's been lacking is a sort of really unified rebel movement. I mean, not that they really had that in Libya either. It was in both places. We're talking about hundreds of militias in different parts of the country. But essentially, yes, the U.S. and Britain and France are looking for a sort of unified military force and combined with a sort of government in a box, a government in exile, that they can then start, feeding more weapons to. As far as I know, the peaceful political opposition in Syria is not part of this new organization. So essentially, it's bringing together the Syrian National Council, the Free Syrian Army, and some of the militia groups from inside Syria.
All right, do we have any more questions for Sandy?
I have a question. Did Iran and Russia have an agreement, a treaty signed with regards to nuclear fuel being given to Iran by Russia?
No, I think that was a proposal at one point that never really got agreed to. In the deal that Turkey and Brazil worked out with Iran, I don't think they ever quite settled exactly where the enriched uranium was going to be sort of held in escrow for Iran. They agreed to the basic idea in principle, but And I guess maybe Russia was one, still one of the options at that point. I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Sandy. Now, I'd like to do just a little bit of notice about what we're going to be doing on our next call. The Fort Benning protest of school against the Schools of America is happening this weekend. Is that correct, Sandy?
Yes, that's right. Weekend before Thanksgiving.
Right. And when it is over, we will have Father Roy, or Goyce, I'm not quite sure if that's
Bourgeois. Roy Bourgeois.
And he of course, is one of the leaders. If you don't know about him, I highly suggest you Google him. He's with the SOA Watch, the Schools of America Watch. He's been at it for quite a long time. It's an extremely inspiring story. And he will be our guest speaker next month after the vigil, which is happening this week. And it's been going on for many, many years. And we look forward to hearing him speak to us. We need to close the Schools of America. This is the school that teaches militaries from all over the world how to torture, how to use other tactics that we've been using that are anti the 99% and pro the 1%, how to keep the military going as opposed to human rights and human needs at the forefront of what's important for governments to do. So we hope you'll also join us next month, and please do contact us if you want more information about Jobs Not War. This is going to be a major campaign that we'll be pushing, so stay tuned for more information on that. And thank you all for joining us. Sally, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
No, that's good.
Okay, we're actually getting out of here on time tonight, so thank you all.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
We'll be. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.